What?
Wait a second.
Lieutenant, I think you better talk to this guy.
I'm busy here.
It's some dock supervisor down at Pier 34.
What's the problem?
He says the Titanic just arrived.
Well, better late than never.
Welcome to Kerberos Productions' intermittent podcast about our current works in progress, the video game biz in general, to anything that tickles our fancy in those spare moments between progressing and our work. Welcome to Curbstop. Episode 5. I'm here with
Martin Serlis.
And I'm Chris Stewart. And
John Yakimo.
Wait. Our guest, whose job is...
Yeah, art guy.
Who are you, and what have you done with Aaron?
Hello, Internet Cyberland. I'm subbing in for Aaron Nimmo, who is out this week.
And enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
As John's PR agent...
That was as enthusiastic as it gets.
That's right. John is a senior artist on our team. Responsible for much of the monster horror in the pit.
Yeah.
And responsible for... the cutting edge of brutality in giant robot monsters and kaiju.
Yeah, speaking of monster horror.
Monster horror.
And
that happens from me.
A big, big part of pretty much every project going back to Born of Blood?
Yeah, that's when I came in.
That's when John came in at Kerberos, was Born of Blood. So everything forward.
Making the Zool ships.
Yep, came in on Born of Blood, but he was like 12 years old when you got off the bus with your little satchel.
Cut his teeth, and by 13, we put him on, helping out on Fort Zombie.
Okay, put him to work, like all children should be working.
Aaron is out this week, and it seemed like a good opportunity then, rather than four voices trying to talk together, we'll bring in a guest and...
We have a guest speaker! Guest speakers are here! It's a guest speaker episode, yeah!
That's actually worse in person.
It's not even a segment. You're making little sing-song titles for another 5 weeks, you'll be sing-songing the entire episode.
Dude, I just break the rules, okay?
That's right. I'm a rule breaker.
I'm a rebel.
Right. See a rule, I break it.
Don't walk? I'm walking, bitches.
He just did one here. Let's start off with Kerberos news.
Kerberos news! Kerberos news! This is the part where it's all about Kerberos being in the news! Yeah!
Actually worse than I think it might be.
We should have warned you in advance.
No, I've listened to the podcast.
Actually, no, that's not true.
I know that they're coming.
Because every podcast, I try to project on people what it's like.
There's medication for people at the podcast to take, so it's not as jarring.
Kerberos news type stuff. Where do you want to start?
Kerberos news. Shall we go with Blast from the Past?
No, let's leave that to the end. Let's just quickly get through the up-to-date stuff, because last time we were kind of busy. We're still crazy busy. But since the last episode, we put out... First gameplay video clip for Kaiju.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I'll try to explain the thing. When you're a big, big publisher, there's usually a dedicated team of marketers and dedicated artists, or at least artists who are being whipped to work above and beyond their task list to create marketing assets. There's lots of whipping and working beyond capacity here, but there's no real marketing team or whatever. So we are very, very careful and economic about when we put stuff out. We found in the past we put stuff out too early and people just go, oh, that's your game? It's like, no, that's an early shot of our game. Well, your game sucks. It's like, that's not the finished game. It's very early. You don't understand. Well, I'm not going to buy your game because it's early and it sucks. Okay, stop. So this time we're only a few weeks out from getting this game out the door to people, and we finally, not counting the crowdfunding clips we put together, which was our beta stuff. And you'll notice if you look at the videos, I stamped it very large pre-alpha.
Yes.
a real good look at Stompin' a City, which is a good comparison back to the crowdfunding, because that's what we were also showing, was the basic mechanics of Stompin' a City. Now it's the end game Stompin' a City.
Stompin' a City with heavy weaponry, though I think in that shot you kind of have mid-level weaponry.
Yeah, you're at your second of three levels.
But there'll be a lot more gameplay bits to come.
But we showed quite a few different weapons there. Area effects and the big, what It wasn't the basic I-beams. What I-beams did it have?
I'm trying to remember. The Death Stare, the more upgraded.
The Death Stare, the upgraded one.
The green ones. Those are always fun when you get a line of tanks.
Yeah.
Just pop, pop,
and
pop.
That was the other thing. There was a lot of army in there popping off their various weapons, too. So.
Yeah, more and more units are going in every day. Like, I'm getting... We got the laser tanks are in.
Yeah, everything's passing from its beta state into its final state. So as they pass in their final state, they make it into the final version of the game.
We'll show off more, which will also show off the different times of days. This one was kind of a tipping into night, which is its own unique challenge because it quite literally is, where am I going based on city lights and lamps and stuff like that.
When you're marching through a forest and there's not a lot of parks around, you're like...
Yeah,
you can't. Oftentimes, you can't see something coming at you.
Like I said, there'll be more gameplay vids every few days. The Roturn is working on one right now, even as I speak.
Rowan the intern.
He's Rowan the designer now.
Well, we make that qualification every single time, but I realized the other day what it was is it's those of you who are Canadian remember Rick the intern from Much Music. Sure. It's stuck in my head. But yeah, let's cap off there. Everybody, it's a good time to say keep following our social medias. Kurros Productions, no spacing there on Facebook, so facebook.com/Kurros Productions. And from there you can find also the specific Kaiju Facebook page. Twitter, we're at Soulforce, and our boards. So go to Kurros-Productions.com.
Feel free to ask other people what their Kaiju or Go-Go coverage is going to be like.
Yes, exactly. So keep an idea. That's the base stuff. We always like to have you guys on as official first-tier followers, but also you'll be start seeing it in other press outlets and digital download partner sale pages coming very, very shortly. So, and most of those assets we talk about will end up there. Lots of pictures. We're doing lots of screenshot stuff. It's all very exciting.
It is very exciting.
Very busy and very tiring, but very exciting. But yes, Blast from the Past. The wave continues.
Yes, in this increasing homeworld nostalgia era that we live in, which is people seem to be getting over their initial release flaws with it, which is good.
Kind of the initial launch hiccups that...
Yeah.
I saw the usual typical guys who are like, this is... completely not 100%, so it's an automatic fail. Thing, yes. And the guys, to their credit, have kind of got it worked all out. And people have played more and come to grips with it a lot more. So, yeah, that's going thumbs up for them.
Which is good.
But what it also means is...
is The Escapist in their good old reviews section by Stu Shearer. Gave us a blast from the past by... reminiscing about a critical mission from Homeworld Cataclysm. And titling it Battling the Batuzzi and the Value of Death in RTS Games. This was a mission that we did kind of to start the final story arc in that game.
It's the end of the build-up and it's the start of the end. There's
two or three more missions to go to get to the end.
In movie terms, it's the end of Act 2.
End of Act 2, exactly, right? And you will become empowered to finally fight a fair fight against the Beast.
Oh, wait, let's embarrass John. John, have you ever played Homeworld Cataclysm?
No, Chris, I haven't.
Do you have anything you can bring to this conversation? Okay.
To be fair, his parents, he was too young to have his own computer.
That's true.
I'll let myself out.
If we're working from the conceit that we hired him at 12, John wasn't born when the game came out. So.
It was prenatal gaming.
Okay.
There was a mission we put in there that we tried to tie together a bunch of themes in the game. The Beast was a techno-organic creature that subsumed ships. The player was outclassed by it most of the time, so for the first part of the game, you're basically fighting holding and retreat actions, trying to just survive while looking for some sort of advantage. And also I wanted to tie together that it was a bigger problem than just you, because most video games just make it either about you or... getting the zombie virus is still pretty much about you.
The game is an RTS, so it means it's focused on you and your ships and your fleet. And being an RTS, there's not a lot of narrative opportunity.
But
so.
Also, the point is that with those games, your fleet is still you, right? I want to draw in the fact that the entire galaxy
is threatened. That's what I mean. Right? We never see anything else.
Exactly, right? In different ways. So, yes, the Bentuzzi, who you went to go talk to get some sort of ancient high-tech help from, you come across them scarpering out of the galaxy to get away. And that drives home the point that, for you, it's your people getting attacked by some strange creature which kills them and steals the starship. For them, the entire galaxy has become a zombie nightmare of... them being possessed.
It's a lost cause, basically.
Yeah, and also, it's just the end, right? It's not their ships being taken, it's them.
Yeah.
Right? They are the ships.
They're built into it.
They see it in a super personal way. So they try and get away, and you try and stop them. And wackiness ensues. And the write-up there was, basically, it's a man confronts God and finds God
lacking. Wanting. Yeah.
Yes. Which a lot of people seem to like, because the article went over well, and the... clip posted on YouTube received a lot of...
I'll put the link on the podcast posting. Stu talks a bit more from the angle of the idea of an RTS investing a sense of loss and death in your units versus the what people... Well, I mean, it's so endemic in RTS is that the term for it is spamming. You just build up a ton of guys and throw it. That's a common RTS problem, that you just do not regard your units as worth anything.
Oh, I have the opposite problem in, like, every RTS I play. Like, if I lose a soldier, I'm like, oh, no!
Well, you're a sensitive soul. I have them
run away whenever their health hits yellow. I often lose lots of RTS games. I care too much.
Okay, so let me get this straight, though. You... actually read YouTube comments.
Yes, for once. I was lured into it. And instead of the usual horror, they all, like, really...
Was it a shadowy figure from, like, an alley on YouTube? Hey, bud, come here. I got something to... how did you get lured into this?
It's that voice. Yeah, it's like, here, read this. No. Come on, read it.
It'll be different this time.
Yeah.
That's what you say all the time, voice. It's always hurt.
I still have a black eye from last time.
Exactly.
But the comments in this particular case for the clip?
Just people talking about how it was a big, meaningful moment for them. Right? Mm. So... that's kind of gratifying. Anytime you write a piece of script, that's gratifying to hear from people. The only irony part of this is, if you remember, this was the mission that we had the hardest time getting past Relic.
That was the one that there was a couple of weeks of hard back and forth, tense discussions over what it meant.
There was unhappiness that we had made the mighty Bentuzzi look small and that we didn't understand them.
And that they were supposed to be peaceful and nonviolent. How does that work? You put guns on them.
No, there was a side of music part that I was... yeah, there was a bit of telling us we didn't understand them when I'm the one who had fleshed most of them out in the first game. So that was kind of amusing.
Peaceful, just not very merciful.
Yeah, well, we had precedence, right? Because in the first game, you had a thing where you could force attack anything.
Sure.
So in Homeworld, you could force attack the Bentuzzi, and they're kind of like, cut it out. Cut it out. Cut it out. I'm going to hit you. Cut it out. And then they hit you and you die. Because they are super powerful.
Right.
And we didn't change that. In this mission, you do not have a chance. Right? No matter how well built out your fleet. A few people did a clever thing and, like, ran away. And since it's scripted, it kind of plays out anyways. But you can't physically beat them.
That's not the mission.
It's not the mission. And they're just... we just actually took the ship stats from the original game. They can't... with the stats they came from with Homeworld 1, there's no way you can hurt them. Right? You can do like 1/20,000th of their hit points damage to them, and then they haul off. And,
well, no, like, it's funny. Like, I do play RTS games, but my favorite part is playing through the thematic storyline campaign.
Yeah.
It's not just playing, you know, matches online. Yeah. That's fun, too. But I like, you know, a thematic mission where it's not just crush the enemy base. You have to do something.
I like to put in, whenever I write a script for an RTS, I like to put in a mission that technically isn't very hard or isn't very long,
right?
As far as just making ships and fighting stuff, but has some sort of dramatic punch to it, so it kind of give you the momentum to get through the rest of the game. So for Homeworld 1, it was early on in the Return to Carrick mission, right? It's like, that mission isn't particularly super hard. You go back, you rescue the people from the trays. That's the RTS part of it. But your entire planet is burning and dying
beneath
you, so that's the gut punch one. In this one, it's, you know... super beings are fleeing the galaxy and leaving you completely screwed, and you'll lose anyway. So you might as well throw yourself in front of the train and hope the train stops.
Yeah. That was like in the time before, you know, in-game cutscenes and cinematics and stuff. You just gave like a shorter mission with a lot of thematic elements in it.
Yeah, we did. And also, we were in a spaceship game. You're kind of hung for cutscenes
because
it's Spaceship A talking to Spaceship B, right? And if you start, Cars hadn't been filmed yet, so there was no making the spaceship bob up and down and talking. But anyways, yeah. So Blast from the Past. Glad people enjoy it.
If another 2 weeks somebody could bring up how much they enjoyed Power Play 98 or Global Operations, I can feel warm and fuzzy about the entirety of my video game.
There was like that guy playing for New Jersey, and I saw his name on the back of his thing, and I cried because it was spelled so perfectly. It meant more than anything. Pachowski, who's spelled wrong in almost every game, was spelled right. And Chris Stewart.
Who's that? What team that completely non-made up player you just mentioned?
New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, shut up. Stop making up lies. Yeah, that was a nice surprise, especially on the Escapist, which is in the era of the reformatting and restructuring of what game journalism is. They've taken the New Yorker approach. I don't know.
Well, that we are a hobby valid enough to retroflect on and, you know.
Yeah.
Look upon and compare and think about and stuff like that, which I'm in favor of, right?
Yeah, actually. That was actually a big fight a couple of years ago before Roger Ebert passed away there, because he was the biggest name trying to tell us that there was no art to video games.
Or that video games, in and of themselves could contain art but were not art. Make any sense to me.
Yeah, I watched the newest Charlie Brooker's Video Games Change the World. That one he did like a year and a half ago.
He did a second one?
Yeah, we did that first one, which was like ages ago, which was just an overview of gaming. And then he did a Video Games Change the World.
Oh, Change the World, yes, that specific one, yeah.
That was really good.
It was very good.
Yeah, if people haven't looked at those, they should.
It might be on YouTube. But yes, Charlie Brooker. That's not Booker, but Brooker with an R. How Video Games Changed the World. Actually, anything Charlie Brooker, like his weekly
now you're
wipe.
Mixing sections. This is the one you're watching section.
That's my fault this time. I feel
bad. Chris's fault. This is Chris's fault. This is a segment that's been run off by Chris.
Cut that part out.
Okay. So moving on to what? General game industry stuff?
Game industry news?
Sure.
General news. Gaming has lots of news that's not about us, but it should be.
I like that you put that pause in there and waited for me to pull the trigger on you doing the thing. That you made me culpable now.
You just need to record these once, and then he never has to say them again. Just promise to put them in. We don't have to be here for
it. I trust no one.
Yeah, the thing is I initially thought it would be that way, and he won't stop.
No.
He'll just keep going. And frankly, it saves me a bit of work, so it's a bit of a trade-off.
Let's replace him next time.
Maybe.
What I really want is to get set up with one of those radio style, it's got the sound card.
Yeah.
Where it's when it's time, I'll just press the button. And I can go total like drive radio type thing where it's got Martin doing his little thing, and in the background it's like da 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 ba ta.
Realize I'm this close to it talking about my singing song for this segment.
Oh God, let's move on then. What is going on in the game industry right now? I kind of haven't. I either saw something and didn't process it, or just haven't been paying attention the last couple of weeks.
It's been pretty quiet on the Western Front.
In terms of, like, you know, earth-shattering industry stuff, I think console releases are starting to pick up, just in terms of,
you know, really?
game stuff. More stuff is coming out for the consoles that I'm interested in.
Cool. What's his face made a console? The graphic card dudes.
NVIDIA?
NVIDIA made a console. TV box entertainment center that will play games off Google Play.
A PC, not PC type thing?
Yeah, okay. It's called
that's
Shield.
Like a lame console thing. It does other stuff.
Yeah, actually, John's kind of right. It was kind of a console. Did you guys ever trip upon any of the ad push that was put on for something called Xbox 720?
No.
It's a video game projector. It's a projector specifically for video games that's supposed to... if I understand correctly, I haven't delved into it too deep, but my understanding is I think it's, I remember a couple of years ago, there was a couple of TV manufacturers that were playing with this, visual perception thing, which is what it was, is that there was color LEDs around the back of your flat screen television. It would take the edge information from whatever you were screening and then project that color glow out the back. Because there was something visual, like the way our brains process stuff, that if we watch a flat TV, you know, in its, you know, 16:1 framing or whatever, but then there's this suggestion of the color continuing off onto the wall around it, we end up getting this richer experience. which I don't even know if people are buying 4K TVs, let alone ones with fancy LEDs at the back. But this thing seems like kind of to go beyond that, where the projector takes whatever the game is and then projects extra stuff off the outer, the sides of it, not just colors, but effects and stuff like that. So if you're running around shooting stuff, it's supposed to, I don't know.
So it kind of looks like an explosion will bleed off the screen onto the wall around it?
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's very, very odd, but it'll probably die too. I can't.
Yeah,
let's put it this way. Microsoft has enough trouble selling peripherals for the Xbox. I can't imagine a third-party projector thing will do very well, but it was interesting.
It's hard to know what will take hold of people.
Well, we discussed this the other week about whether anything will change the tradition of peripherals not making any difference. I guess that rule's got to break sooner or later.
I think when it comes to, what's it called? The visor thing.
Yeah. That's why. What?
Don't
that's
say
kinda
anything
what...
bad about the visor, you make the Roturn cry.
The Roturn.
Yeah, but I think like that full, you know, encompassing environment. I can't remember the name of it. I keep defaulting to Kinect, but that's not right. That's the motion capture thing that doesn't work.
Roturn, what's it called?
One second.
I own one!
I will say this, one of the best...
Oculus.
Oculus Rift, yes. Yeah. That kind of thing. It changes the environment.
Has he talked before? He's not allowed to talk off mic.
Yeah, but he was induced to talk.
Don't do that.
Okay.
He's already got to take a beating.
Right, because then we have to pay him more.
Okay, from here. Oculus Rift, I remembered on my own. Virtual reality. Or, you know, yeah. It is virtual.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's the one where everybody's putting their money. So yeah. It's a question of whether the money will tip over the public's resistance to change, which essentially is what it is. There's always a resistance to take on something new and different, right?
Yeah.
It's even a cool stuff.
The public barely wants to put on a pair of glasses to watch a movie.
Yeah, and that still actually hasn't taken on. Remember when the 3D TVs came out?
Yeah.
And the frame of reference, the time they were starting to launch that stuff, Vancouver was having its Winter Olympics, and they were projecting some of the Olympics in 3D because Samsung, I think it was Samsung, was trying to sell their 3D TVs, and this was their big PR thing. And I got to go to a demonstration of it. It was great. And I asked the guy, "This is awesome. How many glasses do you get?" "You get two." "That's not family viewing. How much for an extra couple of pair of glasses?" $100 a pair of glasses. This idea is never going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's remember being 5 years old and how much you want to sit around the house with a pair of glasses on.
Yeah.
Without licking them and flicking them at the cat and stirring your pot with them.
Well, the funny part is like it's always seems slightly out of step, because back, remember when you and I were kids, TV tried it 3D a couple times, but it was
Here's the bottom line.
I
want to
say anaphylactic, but that's not right.
Yeah.
Anaglyphic?
It's been 2 years now of the big 3D TV.
Anaglyph.
Book. Has anyone heard anybody talking excitedly about their 3D TV?
Yes, I've heard one person. Do you know who it is? It's a movie director-producer guy down in L.A.
Yes.
He's very excited about it.
Anybody else? Anybody?
And to cap it off, do you know why he got it? It was a present to himself after his wife divorced him. So, not the best argument for everybody's going to go and get one. Well, here's the thing. When we had two televisions, they tried a couple of times the idea of the anaglyph, the red-blue projection of stuff. And they did different stuff in the UK, too. Same thing. You used to go to your corner store, or here there was a couple of events where you went to the 7-Eleven, you got yourself a pair of the anaglyph glasses, and you watched it. The trouble is that tube TVs, depending on their sizes, it was just completely useless. Like, it was because it has to offset the colors, and the resolution is so crappily low, it really didn't work. Now we're in an era where the resolution is so awesome on TVs, if you made it red-green, everybody could have a pair of glasses, and it'd be kind of fun to dick around with.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean,
but they're not doing that. They want you to have the polarized 60-frame-a-second lenses going on. It's like
I said, I may be old and grumpy, but I just don't think it's happening, no matter how much they push
it. Okay, let's just stop here. Yeah. Is Martin maybe old and grumpy? Martin is old and grumpy,
I'm old and grumpy, and 3D TV is baloney. And you kids get off my lawn.
It's a stupid gimmick, and everyone
knows
it.
Well, think about how long it took to get 3D movies off the ground.
Not off the ground.
And they're not. Every time there's a 3D movie showing, that same theater is still showing a 2D one.
Yes.
And I go to the 2D one.
And everybody prefers it, right?
Yes. Now it's skewing the results because you know what? We've wandered into the next section. Just do your little pop culture. Do it.
What we're watching. These are things we're watching and what we're thinking of them. Yeah. So Chris Stewart can talk about 3D movies.
Should we put it to bed? Are we tired of 3D movies now?
I think their 3D movies are tired of 3D movies.
Well, we've had this discussion before too, because the movie guys running out of reasons to skew their opening weekend numbers. Like, opening weekends now start on Sunday the week before. Yeah. That's how they get their record-breaking numbers. They added in 3D because 3D is $2 extra at the box office. And they're like, hooray! And it's like, but it's still, you'd think by now it would have erased the other one if it was that popular, and it hasn't.
Well,
unless they have a plan where in the next little while and everybody gets upgraded to digital, which is pretty close now.
They're already fluffing the numbers because it's like, look how many more percentage of people see it in 3D. It's like, yes, because you have four theaters showing it in 3D and one showing it twice a week in 2D.
Way the hell off the beaten track somewhere.
It's up to them how many people adopt it by switching over screens. Yes. As they slowly phase, if they decide to phase out 2D screens. Yes. Oh, well. Actually, you know what'll kick it over the edge is Avatar 2. James Cameron. Because James Cameron is the one who drove it into the theaters in the first place.
Yeah, it'll only kick it over if the glasses actually let you be an Avatar.
Or make you be a little person in a brothel. What was your saying? I can't remember now.
Chris.
Fetish time. Here's the part where we really
all I'm saying is if the porn industry can't push 3D projection into the home, yeah, nothing can.
That might be the track your people have to app. Know. Yep. There's an Oculus Rift thing.
That's right.
For you.
Actually, no, that came up several months back when it was revealed in Japan that they had the sex machine 3D. Yeah,
this podcast is going wildly off course.
It's crazy to think that it was Aaron that was keeping... No, actually, it's not that crazy to think that it was Aaron keeping us in line on some of this stuff.
About to say.
It's funny that we don't talk porn more when Aaron's around.
Yes.
So what's everybody enjoying this week?
Pulling the eject button.
All right, let's move over to the next one then, which is I think we can all agree, we're all excited that Flash is back on TV.
Yes.
It's super amazing.
We are now tipping over into complete full-on Silver Age awesomeness.
Yeah, well, when they talk about... I went through the episode listing.
Right,
this season, three episodes with the word rogue in it.
Yep.
Pretty awesome.
Coming together quite nicely.
John's the only one who's seen this week's episode.
So we can't really talk about it.
Spoiler alerts.
That's why he's Cheshire Gurney. We try not to spoil the show anyways, right? Yeah. We just talk in general.
Go and watch it.
I did see the trailer that was setting up the second half of the season as it runs out, and it covers four or five different episodes, and there's some stuff in there where it's kind of like...
Oh, yeah, the trickster. The Mark Hamill trickster.
Yeah. Mark Hamill back as the trickster. Yeah. That's super awesome.
Taking a break from filming Star Wars.
Yeah.
It is amazing to think
this show is deeply respectful.
Yes, those guys are so cool that they brought in the 80s actor. Yeah. Well, 90s, technically. 89?
91,
something like that.
Yeah.
They brought him in.
It looked like the 80s because it was so close to the edge of the...
Yeah. They brought him in, and it's pretty clear that by the time we get to a second season...
Yeah.
He'll be out and about. He'll play a much bigger part
because
he'll be around. And then when it came time, and everybody's updated, all the new guys are young guys. I'm like, well, it's a CW thing or whatever. And when somebody had the meeting, like, and it's time for the trickster. And what young actor will be the trickster? Oh, no. It has to be Mark Hamill.
Actually, there'll be two different ones.
Right. Doesn't matter. But they said to themselves, Mark Hamill has to be there.
I think from the beginning that show decided that they would pay respect to a show, which was cool about them because the original is not seen as a huge success or anything like that. It's seen as a weird Tim Burton mutation thing. but they very gutsily acknowledge the fact that without that show, it would have been harder to, say, put The Flash on television.
Yeah.
And they hired a bunch of people from that show.
Quite a few.
The Flash is now his dad.
Yeah.
The love interest, the woman who played Tina McGee, is the scientist from Mercury Labs, who I'm hoping will create Max Mercury. and then this latest thing with Mark Hamill is the trickster, right?
Yeah.
Although, Mark Hamill's not short on cash or anything. But it was very cool to bring him back, right? Which was an important role for Mark Hamill because the trickster, for all intents and purposes, got him the Joker voice work.
It is. Yes, it is what...
Which is another big iconic...
Yeah, huge, like a huge change in path for his career, right?
Yeah.
Well, he was kind of languishing up to that point. That was an entire 80s...
You're going to get a whole dossier from his agent saying he wasn't, so don't ever say that about actors.
I think I've even heard him say that he was kind of languishing, to be honest. Well, because he wasn't hurting, but Star Wars was kind of holding him back, and then...
You're going to get a proper PowerPoint from someone that'll start with the word languishing with a question mark at the end of it.
How dare you, sir?
And then you will be berated with factual information on Mark Hamill's slides.
Okay, fine. I watched The Big Red One. Yes, his career was off and running. I've actually been doing piecemeal, trying to pick up the Arrow, too. Because while I don't know that I have the time to catch up on all the old Arrow, I've been trying to pick up on, get the Ray Palmer stuff and all that. Because it's the trailer revealed it's going to start lapsing over into the Flash.
So. Oh, yeah, they've already done one crossover episode, which was awesome.
Yeah, they fight.
They fight.
No, but the Atom showing up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, spoiler.
What?
What?
You knew he was coming.
The episode is, though, has anybody seen him shrink yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. I don't know
if he has or if I'm just not caught up. Right. But.
Although there's a Flash Adam crossover episode coming up.
Yes, that's what I mean. It's in the trailer. He'll be showing up.
Yeah. So and
they're laying the groundwork for a great little
shared universe thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like... right. And the Supergirl got confirmed.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about
it. It's the same production company, right? It'll be a different channel.
So that's how they're getting around the Warner Brothers won't let them bring Superman is they're going to bring Supergirl.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, nice. And her costume actually was nice and retro. Actually,
cool.
Kind of liked it, like the full skirt and a belly button.
Okay.
We've also been keeping abreast of S.H.I.E.L.D., another good show. Yes,
I have to get caught up on S.H.I.E.L.D., but...
Yeah. But in terms of comic TV shows, there's so many now, and it's great, and there's more coming.
Yeah.
But I can't watch Gotham, because I can't do eye stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's a spoiler, dude.
No, I'm not saying what in particular is happening.
It's a squeamish thing? John can't watch because he's squeamish?
There's an eye thing.
Yeah, it's...
possibly a giant eye attacks Gotham.
It's been there's out an for eye a thing. Few weeks wink, now. Wink.
Don't do that.
It's wink. Been like a... it was out like a month ago, so it's not a huge spoiler. If you've been following it, you know what I mean. But after that, I was like, I can't do eye stuff. I can't do surgery horror.
Yeah.
I just got to give it a miss for a while.
It got a little dark there, but luckily they smartly put the show on break for a month, so you had a whole month to regroup yourself.
Yeah, you can gather myself and try again.
Yeah, just as long as they don't show it in the what you missed in costumes.
Yeah.
No!
Over and over again, every episode.
Yeah.
Remember that thing?
I caught up on Constantine.
Oh, cool.
Oh,
and
wow,
they confirmed that they're bringing it. Going to bring it back.
Are they? Yeah. I was about
that,
to
that was the
that.
Word. That was the word I heard. It was up. It was kind of a question mark.
Yeah. You know, it was assumed canceled.
It did not stick with me.
But I've heard they're bringing it back for a thing. So
it stuck with the further you go, how many episodes did you watch?
Like six.
Yeah, it takes actually more than that. For the first six episodes of watching, going, wow, this would be a good show if it wasn't for the fact that Supernatural has run for like 22 years and it's done to death.
And renewed for season 11 for crying out for
it's, you can tell, though, that it's a different production house than the one making the Flash Arrow Supergirl because they're very, like, they had an Eclipso episode.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And never even properly, like, touched on it or anything like that.
No, but they're doing something. On the other hand, for... No, there's two stages. Gotham is way off on its own.
Yeah.
Gotham's like, hi, I'm Bruce Wayne. This is the Bruce Wayne story.
They got nothing to do with anything else.
Doesn't exist so far.
Yeah. Right?
The Flash, on the other hand, is the other pole. Right? Yeah. Just holy crap, right?
Hand in hand with Arrow.
Hand in hand with Arrow. So Gotham and like Justice Spider-Man League. And the X-Men movies all belong on that pole.
The
right?
far end,
which is, this is the license we've got and this is all we're dealing with, right? Yeah. Flash is on the extreme. No one's with the Flash. Even Arrow is not quite as far out, right? As far as I'm in a comic book universe, the whole universe is here. Everything they'll let me have, I've got.
Freeze rays.
Yeah, exactly.
And possibly a few things they wouldn't normally have. So we're just going to run with it.
Well, they're careful. The thing is, you know that they're careful because they keep mentioning other cities, right? In the DCU.
Yeah.
Right? So they mentioned Bloodhaven and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And that's the cool part because when they do. And they're smart, too, because they're also the same production house is doing the Titans series for TNT.
Oh,
right. And right. They can't have Batman, but they get
Robin. Either Robin or Nightwing. Nightwing,
yeah. Which means Nightwing. You get Bloodhaven, okay. Right? Yeah. Which they've already set it up. They know that we will watch, the same guys watching The Flash, will watch Titans on TNT, that we don't care what station it comes from.
Yeah. How many times in the history of television has there been a cross-network?
Once.
What was it?
Bionic Man, Bionic Woman.
Two different networks?
Two different networks.
Wow.
That show was on two different networks, but it was so popular that they agreed to share actors and to do crossovers, right?
Right. You did just seal that you're a grumpy old man, though.
Oh, very. No, but that's one of the greatest shows in the history of mankind.
That stuff is rare. But it's happened with, like, a younger crowd. I'm pretty sure there was an episode of Power Rangers where they met the Ninja Turtles from that awful live-action one. And, like, cartoons have done it occasionally, very occasionally.
I say no.
Yeah, I think...
I don't think... Like, pastiches, yes, right? But the same... No, but... The same... I'm talking the same actor playing the same character.
Yeah.
Oscar Goldman was Oscar frickin' Goldman on Bionic Man and on The Bionic Woman, and he would just bounce between the two shows.
Yeah. Two shows.
And then once or twice a season, when they're running concurrently, they would come and fight on each other's shows on two different stations, right? There one was CBS.
NBC did have the other one.
Yeah, right? I think NBC.
Or was it ABC?
Well, we can guess.
That's the three.
Yeah. We can guess two out of three, right? But it was, like, huge, right? But they had so much power because they were pulling so many ratings for a couple of years.
I'm kind of really hoping that as they move to, if it's true that they are moving to a second season of Constantine, that they then start to follow after the other guys.
Well, the cool thing, right, Constantine isn't quite on the same pole. It's a little more towards the middle from Batman, because they've done an Eclipso nod.
Eclipso?
They did a Spectre nod, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a big nod.
Spectre nod, and they had, and in the first episode, they had Naboo's helmet.
And there's more than that. There's another episode with Felix Faust.
Yes, and Faust, that's right. Yeah. Faust gets a whole episode.
A whole episode with Felix Faust.
See, that's why you should keep watching the show, because it actually, once it stops worrying about being supernatural, it gets interesting.
The only nod I saw was the Helm of Fate thing.
And it's only 13 episodes. It's a short half season, so it's not that hard to catch up.
The hunting demons aspect, they lean on it for the first few episodes, which is kind of boring, right? Then for the second half, it becomes acts of magic, right? Yeah. Like Constantine fooling around. Yeah, there's demon stuff, but there's also just people using magic badly and things going awry and stuff like that.
Well, I get that. And it started on its own. It didn't spin out of Arrow when we flashed it. So they already started with a kind of connection thing. It makes sense for them to have it.
You know, that'd actually be a pretty good show, Acts of Magic.
Yeah. Well, Books of Magic would be.
Books of Magic is what I mean. Sorry. Books of Acts of Magic is the war, right? Anyways. So
Vengeance is the war.
I know you guys don't watch it, but I'm just going to toss it out here, that Elementary.
Oh, yeah.
There's an ongoing war war for my heart in Sherlock terms, between Sherlock Holmes terms, between the BBC Sherlock and the American television's Elementary. And I actually kind of lean, as much as I love Sherlock, it is Elementary's dealing with stuff that nobody else has dealt with before. Like, they're really leaning on the, you know, his internal... the fact that he fell to drugs in the thing is so poshly Victorian in the books and kind of like just completely washed away in the BBC show, and it is the focal point of the American one, and it's
made it very interesting. Lucy Liu fetish.
I can think of worse fetishes.
Ew.
Oh crap! I just thought of a couple of worse fetishes. Wow. Now I got to think about that for a second. But the solution to one of the episodes. I'm trying to decide if it's a spoiler or not, but it doesn't really matter. They won because one of the solutions of one week's episode was Manos, the Hands of Fate.
Nice. any reference, Mystery Science Theater reference like that?
There was a whole episode about this mysterious guy, and the sketch artist thing was he had a weird hat and a thing over his eye, and the minute they showed it halfway through the sketch, I'm kind of like, that is a terrible sketch. It looks like Targo from Manos, the Hands of Fate. It turns out at the end that's what it was. One of the guys was an old movie buff, and he had to fake a police report, and so he picked Targo. He described Targo as the suspect, the fictional suspect.
By the way, those of you who speak Spanish will know how awful a title is to call something Manos, Hands of Fate.
Is it Spanish or Greek?
Spanish.
On the lighter side of also things you guys probably don't watch, right here, big cartoon fan.
We hate cartoons, John.
Great cartoon. Well, you clearly never talk about them. It's all comics, not cartoons. No, great cartoons.
Maybe we just don't talk to you, John. He doesn't know about our secret cartoon club. Don't tell him.
Okay, list one that you watch.
Invader Zim.
You can't do it. Nah, it wasn't great.
Invader Zim wasn't great?
Womp womp.
Okay, John, what are you watching?
No, this lately has been great for cartoons. Adventure Time is still going strong.
I have not had time to watch it, but I've enjoyed the couple I've seen.
There was an episode a while ago where a character uses the line, "Embrace the ecstasy of my ego death."
Okay.
Disney's Gravity Falls show is amazing.
I've heard good things about Gravity Falls.
It's sweet, in both in the sense that it's awesome and in the sense that it's
actually I've been
sweet.
Meaning to watch it when I found out online that Gravity Falls did a little cross production company nod to Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Cartoons are dead to me until the new season of Rick and Morty starts.
There's another crossover for you.
Yeah.
And that was set up in Gravity Falls it was set up in Rick and Morty like 6 months before it happened in Gravity Falls. That's another great show. And it just went on break. Cartoons are doing mid-season breaks. It's killing me.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Well, the first thing was No Saturday Morning, and then it turned into the network spread. They're just all over the place now. They just decided it doesn't matter when they do it. They'll structure it the way they want. So shows now have these, like you say, they'll do a bunch and then stop. Rick and Morty just decided to do whatever it was, 10 or so?
Yeah, or 11, yeah.
And they were like, that's all the ideas we have. We'll come back later and do the rest. Yeah.
That's the end of season one.
All right, see you later. Yeah. Bye.
And another great show I recommend is Steven Universe, which I put off watching for a very long time.
Steven Universe?
Steven Universe. The premise, it looks like it's a parody of like Sailor Moon. Like there's a bunch of magical superhero ladies and then some fat kids living with them. It looks like it's a parody. And then you get into it and it's actually played straight. Like he has the same powers as they do and they go on adventures. And again, like Gravity Falls, it starts off goofy and then it kind of builds up to something that, you know, everybody can enjoy. It's not just for kids. And they just wrapped up season one, which is pretty spectacular.
Is it anime or Western?
It's animated. But it's
not animated. He means anime.
Oh, anime. Yeah. No, but it's definitely very influenced by it, you know.
I've been using Netflix to try and watch some anime stuff. It's very nice that they have the new Ghost in the Shell Arise series, but it's when I realized that I like the Pat Labor, I like the Votoms, I like the more realistic ones, and I don't know if it's because I'm now officially too old, but I cannot. Like when Full Metal Alchemist was big, I watched a bit of it. I'm kind of like, this is moving fast. Why are they moving so fast? What's going on? Yeah. Like even that was too much for me. And then I'm reading online, somebody on Imgur posted a list. They like to do the helpful, you should watch this. And somebody did one list of their anime you must watch, and it had a lot of old stuff, and I'm like, this is a good list, I'll save this. And somebody else wanted to do there, they're like, yeah, there's more, like if you want to watch some good anime you should watch this. And the top of the list was Kill La Kill, and one of the first commenters was, whoa, you do not tell a noob to go like start on Kill La Kill if you're gonna watch anime, that's not where you go. And I was like, I don't know what that means, and it's on Netflix, and I fired it up, and I'm like, I see what they mean.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to talk anime, what was the show, Steins Gate? Yeah, Steins Gate. Some young people recommended Steins Gate to me, and...
on Netflix? It is on Netflix.
It's on Netflix now, right? But it's one of the best pulling your plot from the internet I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's remember the crazy time traveler dude from the late 90s that was on Reddit and stuff? The guy looking for like an early IBM because he needed the pure chip to get back to the future with.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a guy, I forget what his name was.
John Titor,
yes, all right. He had a run for years as an internet meme. So they just made a whole show around it, right? Like it's just with CERN being the future tyrants of the world.
Okay.
It is... They play it half for laughs and some darkly serious stuff in it. So it's interesting, but it's very tight, right?
Okay.
And the lead mad scientist kid is hilarious in his craziness.
That's okay. Thank you for the tip, because I was wondering about that. I'll watch it now. I rolled the dice on Flamenco Samurai.
Which I think is the result of the anime random name generator breaking down.
Pumpkin Scissors.
I watched the first one.
Giraffe nipples.
And the premise is that a male model who has a childhood reverence for the what amounts to like the Kamen Rider, Power Rangers type Japanese era like of heroes, wishes they were real and decides that since he doesn't really do much, he doesn't impact the world as a model, but he wants to change the world, so he adopts this persona where he dresses himself up and he is flamenco samurai, but he has no powers, he cannot fight. Right. It's like he's literally going after jaywalkers and truant kids who like beat the crap out of him and all that.
It's like the Kick-Ass of
very close
of anime.
At least Kick-Ass brought sticks to fight with or whatever. But he stumbles across and ends up getting help from a police officer who's also bored because it's a very orderly urban environment where quite literally the station is him and one other guy. Like they build. In cities in Japan, corner stations where it's practically just an office, and they stand on the corner and like, well, these four blocks are safe, and go out to calls if there's one or whatever. And I'm like, really? They're gonna keep this up? How long is they're gonna, like? That's literally my train of thought. I'm like, how long are they gonna keep this up for? I go to the Netflix thing. And I'm like, oh my god, they got 26 or so episodes. I go back to episode 2, and it's like. The story about how the media catches on to him. Now he's kind of famous for it. I'm like, okay. Oh, somebody's going to reveal him. I'm like, they are going to keep this up. Fourth one is like, a flamenco girl shows up. I'm like, what the? Then the flamenco team, I'm like, really? And then by the a real super monster shows up. I'm like, okay, wait, what? What
now
just happened?
Now you're talking, yeah.
So apparently by the end of this thing, he is going to turn into a full-blown superhero. I'm like, oh my god. I don't know if I have the patience to watch 26 episodes to watch him turn into... to Kamen Rider, but okay.
Okay. Are we all done with our shows? Oh, no! We're not done with the shows.
All right, last word.
Netflix, a really good documentary called Kirsten or something.
Oh, that's very helpful.
Yes, okay. It is. Chris or Kirsten. It's about a Navy SEAL dude and his voyage into transgenderism.
Is it the one that's in the guy who's in the... Sorry, the woman who's in jail?
No. Nope.
This is a different soldier story.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But they were like super Navy SEAL commando.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that part of his dealing with his despair over his gender issues was driving him to volunteer for the most psychotically dangerous missions.
Okay.
As a form of suicide.
Right.
For all intents and purposes. And then he was kicking. So the more he tried to get himself killed, the more heroic he was, because he was just kicking ass all over these.
Which only reinforced his super machoism.
Well, yeah.
Which then, eventually which then goes back into his gender issues. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And, his record was amazing. And then during the oath part, he goes, I'm, going to be transgendered. And the army went, see ya. Right. Or the Navy, okay. I guess.
The Navy. But,
yeah, and which was a waste. It's just an interesting study. It's a very interesting study that shoots a lot of holes into the cliches.
Hmm.
It is sad to see a person who did that much combat and that much death and destruction have to say that checking their email is more traumatizing.
Wow.
Than being in the middle of combat.
As in abusive?
Abusive.
Right. Okay.
It makes you wonder why we live in a world where anybody doesn't think it's a mental health issue that you feel driven to tell a person with no effect on your life how much you hate them for what they're doing. Right?
Right.
Like, I got news for you. A Navy SEAL dude putting on a dress has nothing to do with my life in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Like, what has to be wrong with me? Seriously wrong with me?
Yeah.
To be driven to alert him to the fact that I hate him or that he's ugly. Right? Like that, the fact that you can be transgendered and most of the nation considers you to have a problem.
Yeah.
But you can write hate mail to people you don't know who have nothing to do with you, and that's, okay, yeah. I'm going to do it myself, but I understand.
As an armchair psychologist, my understanding is that if you reach that point, you're lugging around your own issue.
I'm not even going to go that far. I'm going to go as
I am, I just did.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, well, yeah. Or you watch a lot of programs.
Well, that was your question. What is wrong with you? There's something wrong with
you. There is, right? But it's more rhetorical in the sense, like, why isn't our culture acknowledging that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Our culture sits there and goes, transgender. But, oh, took your time out to say what, hate him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, sure.
Anonymous, pointless hatred.
Yeah, it's not smiled at, but it's, oh, I understand.
Yeah. Well, right? I don't know what the cultural headspace is at, but we live in an era now where it's like, a person wants to change their gender. as Martin says.
Yeah.
Nobody calls out the guys who decide to write it and say,
I
hate you, go kill yourself. Yeah. And worse yet, if you are on the short list of people that stand up and go, dude, what the fuck's wrong with you? Eight people will show up behind you, say, in an internet thing and go, oh, the social justice warrior has shown up.
Well, that's the counterattack.
It's, right? It's like, or maybe I'm kind of okay with humanity.
Yeah. Again, to jump to the point, imagine what it would have been like if there had been an internet in 1937.
Oh, jeez.
Right. You know, let's just put it that way.
Well, the stupid, ugly, idiot candle burns just brightly before it goes out, right? This is all coming to a head. Yeah, that's the positive spin I like to put on things.
Yeah, exactly. Between this and the misogyny thing, right, the weird, twisted men's movement crap, right?
Yeah. I'm hoping we're seeing gamer game stuff.
Yeah, we're seeing the death throes, right? Because you're right. It's a good point, John. No one, and it's the same thing all over the world, right? Like the men you see setting fire to their daughter because some guy held her hand. No one who is secure in their power in the world does that crap.
Yeah.
Those are acts of desperate people who feel the world slipping away, right? And I hope the world is slipping away. Good point, right?
The candle is also smelly.
Yes, it's sticky. Well, it is a turd candle, so, you know.
The trick is you want the break to happen at a point where it can then heal, reform, and we move on. If the internet had been around in 1930, we may have all died in atomic fire in the 50s. So,
quite possible. But yeah, the point being is, it's an excellent documentary. It takes... of course, it's...
You know, I will try and find out what the name of it is
and put it on the response of someone going, oh, but it really slanted in her favor. How...
Why would it not be?
Why would it not be?
Yeah.
Right?
We want it to be slanted in her favor because it should be.
Yeah. It's someone who served their country and then chose a lifestyle. Yeah. Like, how can that not be slanted in their favor, right? But I don't know, like I said, ooh, it's not that simple. Yeah, it's that fucking simple, folks, right?
When people say it's not that simple, or it's not that clear, it is, they just don't like it.
Yeah.
They don't like how clear it is.
Yeah, great. And to be honest, it's a really excellent documentary because it kind of, she's become kind of a touring, not a crusader, but a touring inspiration person. Like, don't kill yourself if you're having gender issues, right? Talk to me about it, sort of thing.
Well, that's the thing. Another thing the internet has done is that there's a lot of... you can see a lot more ugliness
because
everyone's got an outlet, but the good people have outlets, too.
Very true, right? And she's kind of doing this. And the documentary is sophisticated enough that it's kind of going, yeah, you know how when he was in the army, he was doing avoidance through battle? She's kind of still doing a bit of avoidance through helping, right? And it's like... It's not overly, it doesn't hit you over the head, but if you look at it, you go, yeah, fair point, right? Person's still got some issues to work through, right? But yeah, it's a good thing to watch. And if you're interested in that sort of thing, or even if you're interested in really supporting soldiers, soldiers be supported. Because the most interesting part of it is she's at a gathering and there's an older officer in full uniform with his full...
His fruit salad.
His fruit salad all over, right? And he's just talking, and he's making the valid point that her having to leave the military was a waste. That it was kind of a $6 million man sketch, right? In the sense he was like, we've invested years of training into you to make you an amazing soldier.
Yeah.
You have a track record, right? Sergeants like you are not a dime a dozen, and you're a significant investment by this country, and we threw you over the fence.
You're an incredibly valuable resource.
You're an expensive resource.
That got kicked out over
issue, right? And he's like, that's idiotic.
Yeah.
And from a military sense, he's also very smart.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're right. She wasn't, her bit wasn't, I'm putting on a dress and I don't think we should shoot anybody anymore, right?
Yeah.
It was just like, same thing, believe all the same stuff, want to do the same stuff.
Yeah, I'm just a woman, actually.
I'm just a woman, actually, who believes all the same thing. And it's like, nope, you're out.
Right? Yeah, and like, given that the last 10 years has been a big fight for women in general to go, I'm fine with fighting, let me into the military.
Pointing out as an idiocy of resource wasting was very,
very true, smart.
Right. Yeah. So,
well, let's just leave off on the note that if you have Netflix... Sorry, what was the question?
If you have Netflix, search the name Kristen...
Don't worry about it. I said I was going to put it in the links.
Right. Yeah. Right.
My point was, if you have Netflix, you should honestly be checking out the documentary documentaries in general, not just this one.
You can skip also pretentious TED Talk stuff.
You ignore that stuff, sure.
Some of them are good. But.
And my pro tip of the day is if you have a smartphone or something like that, or your computer, obviously, log in there because searching for stuff on your Xbox is ridiculous.
Falling your eyes out with spoons. Oh, wait!
So go digging. There's a lot of really good informative documentary stuff. The TED Talks and a couple of the alien ones. Yeah. The alien ones are kind of trash, too.
Okay, let's wrap this up with
questions. You got questions for us? Questions about Kerberos and the games it makes. Yeah.
This is gonna be a long one because we forgot about questions in the earlier part.
And we skipped it last week. And we're sorry.
I'll kick things off then. Little Nall White on our board asks whether backers will get a choice of where they get their copy of Kaiju Agogo. Backers of our crowdfunding for Kaiju Agogo do get a copy of the game. They also get the follow-up two DLCs with the two monsters. And the question is will they be able to get their choice? Now, at the time that was asked, and we did tell people we would make sure everybody got a Steam key.
Yeah.
And then we were going to do as best we could to make sure that they got whatever suited their thing. The trick being, though, is that I can't, for example, Steam is very loose with their keys. They don't mind handing them out left, right, and center. Good old games, different model, and not so much. But we did promise people we would do everything we can if they have a preference to try, even if it just comes down to getting a DRM-free copy to them or whatever. Yeah. So that's about as far as I can go now. I can't really say yes, because then if I talk to somebody goes, can I get it from Zugabonk.com? And I'm like, well, we're not signed up with Zugabonk, or Zugabonk refuses to, give keys or, tack on free copies.
Like, permission to speak philosophically, frankly, sir?
Sure.
About this whole Steam, not wanting from Steam issue, we're super excited, as Chris Stewart says, to try all we can. And I deeply respect your phobias and wishes. On the other hand, it is getting to be later in the 21st century, and we need to look at certain realities. And the reality is that as far as getting you product in the best, reliable, fastest way, especially being able to update it in the best, reliable, fastest way, Steam
is pretty superlative right now.
It is it, right? It's the giant gorilla sitting in the room. And it's not like other places are as easy, but just smaller, so we don't want to deal with it. They're not. Everyone else is difficult in some way or form, and it takes time. We will still try and do it, but this thing where people really, really want their game to come from Dr. Obscuro's Fun Hut, but it takes us 12 extra man hours to make sure Dr. Obscuro has his thing and has posted it, and then to follow it up and make sure it doesn't clash with the other stuff, and the inherent DRM risk, because of course it just gets run away with. That takes effort, and I'm not saying we won't do it, but there's just so many of us in this team, and it takes significant man hours to chase down every new vendor, especially with whatever the more quirks that vendor may have in their pipeline, the more hours it takes.
In a growing indie gaming world, we're kind of on the big side, and it's still a lot of work to juggle this
stuff. Jump through, and a lot of weird things that occur. And like I said, I'm not saying we're not going to do it, but I'm saying I think we're coming to a time where you're going to have to come to some sort of middle ground with us on these issues, right? We can't participate fully in your rejection of monolithic things, right?
We do respect that people have a brand preference.
Yep.
Some of it is kind of old brand preference, where Steam was a very different creature than it is
now. I'm not going to talk about whether Steam is good or not. I'm just talking about the time it takes to shift stuff around, and not just time, how useful it is.
Yeah.
Right? I know you have reasons, like I said, Steam ran over your cat.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it just doesn't get any better or faster for indie game distribution and updating your game and getting you the things you need to play the game. You want DLCs? It's instant, right? You want patches? It's instant. Everywhere else is harder, sometimes massively harder.
Yep.
So, like I said, we're trying the best we can, but please keep that in mind.
It's been proven scientifically that repeated exposure to a phobia can cure you of it.
See, they'll get mad because they think you're trying to convert them.
Give it a try.
They think you're converting.
Next question.
Next question. Okay, the math in Sot's question has to wait till Aaron's back, because only she understands that. Oh, Ricky ZF asks about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man skin.
Or a potential Stay Puft Marshmallow Man
skin. Yeah, he suggests for Armageddon.
Yeah, it would, we were going to skin one of the three kaiju that we have planned that works best with Gordon. He's our most humanoid giant monster.
I'm going to interject and say we're not skinning Armageddon as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, who is a copyrighted trademark of Sony Pictures Entertainment.
This is a potential concept.
Yes.
Idea, maybe.
Well, maybe we'll make him the Stay Puft Michelin Man.
Something safe, yeah.
The Pillsbury Stay Puft Michelin Man.
Can't sue us, man.
The Mush Man. The can't sue us, man. All lawsuits will bounce off his rubbery hide. Yeah.
The puffy, sugared dude.
The curds of whey, man.
ZF also asks if the kaiju will be able to be intercepted en route to a city, and what things can you do to increase or decrease these chances? Yes, you will be able to be intercepted, and yes, there will be fleets searching for your island to come and kill you. There are some technologies that'll make your kaiju harder to detect, travel faster, and eventually it's some technology that'll allow you to leap to the target without chances of interception.
Basically, the conceit of the game is the minute you announce your intentions by stomping all over Anchorage, Alaska, the world's going to start building up to try and hunt you down.
Yeah.
So.
And just to go back to the skins for a second, skins in general, like I love the idea of them. I hope we can do a lot, and I hope people will enjoy the ones that we do put out and clamor for more.
Yes, well, we have the first...
we have a variety of skins in progress for yes. A Ginormosaurus.
Yes, and as soon as we can show you footage of one of them in action, we will show it.
We've revealed some stills of concepts of
yeah, them. But it's time to show them in motion as soon as we have the interface finalized.
We have spent years waiting for our Team Fortress hats equivalent. And this is it.
Yeah.
The skins of our kaiju.
Once the skins are put together, it's not that hard to put them in and get them looking pretty good.
So, hopefully that answers that question.
Mm.
I have another one here from Little Timmy. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Joe Stedge.
Joe. I think he says Joe in the name. I think we can go with Joe.
Just go.
Joe.
Little Ricky Joe. Little Timmy Bob. Actually, he had three, so let's blow through them as quickly as possible here. Expanding ground pounders out into the other races?
Yep.
We've talked about it before. We will always...
Time and inclination, right?
Time and inclination.
It's a growing game, just like all our games
are. It's a scheduling and a resource thing. Yeah, it's always what it is. But yes, there's no way that we're not wishing that you could fight... We totally want you to fight the Leer, etc.
And
the
Zool and...
Yeah.
And I know a little junior designer who would love to do more missions.
And then the continuation on that is the Loa and the Pit. And I think we dealt with that in the past
a bit. They are a Pit 2 entity.
They have resolved to save them for the sequel.
Yeah. And then he asks how we go about the balance of designs and lore. Do we do design first and then lore, or lore and then the designs in our game? And he means art-wise, not...
It starts with the lore first. We go to the lore to get...
John, I know you're an artist, but I want Martin to answer this question. No, go ahead, John.
No, we start with the lore. That's where it all flows from. We start, and obviously, whatever we create has to conform with lore that's come before.
Yeah.
It's not, and in a lot of cases, it's not a first one then the other. They go hand in hand. And when we create new races, like
there's a lot of collaborative stuff too. I've seen you sit down and talk with Aaron, where there's a lot of backing and forth thing and brainstorming.
Yeah. And the style counts. It's like So John decides that there's going to be, it's time to start working on the Leer or the Zool females for the Pit, right? So they, of course, have to go from the stuff in the book, right, in our Bible, to the art style of the Pit.
Right.
That's the first transition they have to make, right?
Yeah, like what are the elements that have to be in? They have to be bigger than the males, obviously.
Yeah.
They have to be shaggy and massive and powerful. Yeah.
So he basically makes that pass. And then
for like original races like the Hopkinites, there's a lot of stuff in the pit that didn't start out in lore. No. We decided it would be cool if we could have a race based on some Fortean monsters. Maybe we want to invent some robots. Yes. Maybe we want to introduce some new stuff. You know, can it work in sort of the Star Wars
universe? If there's a single Fortean out there listening to this podcast, you can have a little contest with yourself. Picking up the monsters from the pit that are
we got a lot already, and I have a list of
historical lore.
Yeah. You'll know you found them because there's an achievement.
Yeah,
if you get them all.
And in terms of expanding the pit, we certainly could because I have a list of another 20 famous alien monsters that I want to make into pit creatures.
Yeah, that'd be the pit two or of them.
Don't mention the Ortha.
Yeah,
so secret.
It's very wide open though in Kaiju because we're removed from our flagship IP, sort of the Stars. And really, it all kind of grows out of what nod or homage we want to do with a particular monster.
It goes from our lore to the world's lore.
The world's lore.
We're, the lore of giant
almost
monster
every
movies.
Single monster is us
and
nodding.
Actually, in that game, a lot of the lore did spin out of the design first. Because when the monsters were created, we then needed characters to have built them.
Yes,
and then therefore the scientists came out. And then they kind of, they're mad scientists. And this is what they're doing with the world.
Yeah.
But that was very art-driven. It's the one instance where...
It worked much the same as the lore. For a brand new game, the chain is design makes outrageous demands, lore justifies it, and art makes it alive.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of the chain. It works, right? So my initial design notes for the initial races for Sword of the Stars, quite a bit more meager than they turned out to be, right?
Well, like I say, it works hand in hand.
Yeah.
You get some art, and then you think, okay, now here's a new cool lore idea.
Yeah.
Here's a design thing I want to do. Now draw that.
Yeah.
And it's a cycle.
And we end up with the desire to have a robot-y monster, an organic-y monster, and a cyborg-y monster.
And then suddenly now we have the Pokemon type system.
Yeah, we have a theme, right.
That's cool.
It's been a very fun organic process this time because, for example, between crowdfunding last year and here, early in crowdfunding, we said, well, I'd like a kaiju-y type icon to put on our social media to talk to people about it. So you guys sat down and designed this engineer-y type character loosely modeled after me.
Right.
With a couple of nods to Ghostbusters. Because apparently you guys think I love Ghostbusters. I don't know where you got that idea or whatever. But you keep putting it in.
Yeah.
And he was a great guy. And there was discussions at the time that later on he'd make a great DLC mad scientist in which he'd have a particular type of monster and
we
got to the point where in the game needs to talk to you not just from your mad scientist but from other people, so this engineer guy is now currently your first helper, one of your helper guys on your secret base, because the mad scientist isn't making this giant monster by himself.
Yeah, the mad scientist has minions now, and some of them are not just faceless.
And then the idea is that later on he will grow into his own mad scientist. He'll go off and make his own thing. Like, it's actually really, it's lore, it's almost like growing a crystal. Yeah. We've made a seed, and it's growing.
Who knows what the story is going to be there? We don't know what it is yet. We just know the events that are going to happen, and we're going to write something
I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah,
like I said, I mean, I can't speak for John, but I find the process really rewarding creatively.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Same here.
Yeah.
No, I hate what I do.
Much more than the corporate model where all of this just comes down the chain in briefing papers, right? Like, you get the briefing paper telling you what the game must have. Then you write your section of it and you pass it on.
And that never changes.
It never changes. And
it's a checklist.
You don't really interact much. There's a meeting where people, argue about...
Are you doing what I told you?
Yeah.
No. If you saw any of the crowdfunding concept stuff, you realize that the world is our oyster. Pop culture is our oyster in terms of making giant monsters. And
it's the design spiral. It just goes round and round and ever outwards.
That's why everybody out there needs to talk about this game as much as possible. Because the more we do, the more you will see.
Yeah.
People, just as a good sign off then, by the time you hear this, if you haven't jumped in by going to kaijuagogo.com there, and if you weren't part of our crowdfunding backers, and if you haven't, that's coming to a close. It's time to jump in now because we'll be closing that door, because that door not only gets you the game but gets you the bonus DLC skin stuff, right?
Yeah,
so
which is not going to be available after
the game is released in the world. We'll open back up our own direct purchase thing, but we basically
checked into the feasibility of our bonus
You don't read your email because I sent you one yesterday saying it's been confirmed.
It's been confirmed, so why don't you announce it then, monkey boy?
Yeah, because Murphy's Law says that something may go wrong still. But yes, there was a big question mark about how we'd implement, and there's still a few technical things we got to work out with Dave, but what we wanted was, speaking, going back to Martin's point about the effort it takes to do stuff, if we were going to, you know, shower the world with skins and the fun that comes with,
fingers crossed,
personalizing your monster, we needed some backing from certain Steam backend stuff, and it looks like we have it. So, hooray!
Right on.
But literally, that's the only place where it's possible, right?
Yeah.
So, if we offer a deal, the current plan is to offer you a deal that if you just want to pre-purchase just to be supportive and stuff when the page goes up, that's great, and you'll get a skin out of the deal, right?
Yeah.
A unique skin, which is cool. Be prepared for announcements about pre-purchase and skins.
Yep.
On Steam.
Yep. That's all.
Yes. Oh.
So busy for the next couple of weeks. Anyways,
crazy
that's a good point to leave off and get back to work here. So,
Time to get back to work. All we do is work.
Episode 6 in a couple of weeks. I'm Chris Stewart, producer of Kerberos Production. I'm here with
Martin Serlis, lead
grumpy
designer.
Old man at Kerberos Productions.
Yeah, same thing.
And our special guest,
John Yakimo, artist extraordinaire.
Senior artist.
I may edit out the extraordinary. We'll see how it goes.
The pod is cast.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out, John.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, right. It was fun. Would cast again.
10 out of 10.
Don't let go of your podcast head, again. Back to your hovel. Wow.
Do you want me to cut it out?
Yeah. Why don't you ask Lucy Liu what she thinks?
Do you want me to cut it out?
Why don't you ask Lucy Liu?
Do you want me to cut it out?
Hello, Lucy.
Do you want me to cut it out?
Hello, Lucy. I'm not wearing any pants. What should I do? Okay, we should just cut this whole part.
I guess I'm cutting it out.
Editing! Editing! Who's going to be? Editing.
I'll cut it out at your bit. Fine.
Who cares? I'm going to say some guys will respect.